Okay, here's a picture of Esav selling his birthright to Jacob. The thing is, you have to look at the faces. You have to look at the faces of the two protagonists and see, one is obviously an intellectual because he has that kind of a beard.
Yeah.
And he has that kind of face that spends too much time reading. And the other one is a Kazakh.
Right. He's
All
these weapons, you know.
You don't have to, like, figure it out. It's
all
there.
Figured.
It's there. Anyway, this is the most wonderful parsha because it talks about everybody's family. You know, everybody has a brother, everybody has a father, everybody has a mother, and the way they distribute themselves, right, in every family, is not the same. There's a difference. Sometimes the father does better, sometimes the mother does better. Mm. All of these things are in this week's parsha. But we can't learn all of the parsha together, but we'll learn a little bit of it. The parsha begins, Ve'ele toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham holid et Yitzchak. So you know that there's always a problem about where to start a story. You know, if you had to tell a story about something that you know happened, but you know, you have to get a run into the story. You have to start from somewhere. You can't just tell the story. So you have to tell the story. You have to tell the story with a beginning. You have to begin someplace. So this Pasuk tells us that the story is the story of Toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. Yitzchak ben Avraham, I mean, it's a son connected to his father. Right? There's a connection. Now we know about Yitzchak, and we know about Avraham. Right? Yitzchak was pure. Everything was simple to him, to Yitzchak. God said it, we do it. It was all very obvious and very simple. And Avraham holidet Yitzchak means that part of the story was done. Avraham had a son. This was not something that was obvious in the days of Avraham. It was the son had to be worthy. He had to be a son that we could appreciate. So that's the first pasuk. Right, that Eile toldot Yitzchak ben Avraham. Avraham asat Yitzchak. There's already a little progress. Avraham has a son. He lives up to expectations. Right, and now we're going to talk about Yitzchak because the toldot of Yitzchak are different. The demands on the toldot of Yitzchak are different because we want to, after all, create a nation. And creating a nation means that everybody, every child, gets automatic entree into the nation. That's what happened at the time of Yitziat Mitzrayim. There were no demands. Once you were the son of one of the sons of Yaakov, then you were in. Okay? Rashi says, Avraham olidet Yitzchak al yidei shekatav akatuv Yitzchak ben Avraham huzkak lomar Avraham olidet Yitzchak. Rashi is dealing with a Rashi kind of problem, which is not so interesting to me at the moment, but Rashi is interested in sentence structure. How come it says Yitzchak ben Avraham, Avraham olidet Yitzchak. I mean, of course, if Yitzchak is the son of Avraham, so Rashi's got to say something about that. Uskak lomar Avraham olidet Yitzchak, lefi shehayu leitzanei hador omrim, leitzanei hador are silly people. They said, me avimelech nit abra sarah. You remember there was the story of Abraham going to Abimelech, and maybe that's where it happened that she became pregnant. Charei kama shanim shahatasham Abraham velo nit Abrahamenu. He was there several years, and she didn't become pregnant. Ma asah HaKadosh Baruch Hu? What did God do? Tzar klaster panav shel Yitzchak domeh le'Avraham. He made it so that the child looked like his father. That was like but as good as a genetic proof as you could get in those days. Tzar klaster panav shel Yitzchak domeh le'Avraham. Ve'idu hakol Avraham holid et Yitzchak. And then everybody said, Avraham, he's the father of Yitzchak. V'zeu shekatav kan Yitzchak ben Abraham haya sharei eidut yesh Abraham olid et Yitzchak. Okay, so Rashi says this pasuk somehow solves a problem. After all, we know Rashi doesn't say it here, but it says elsewhere Abraham was very old and Sarah was very old, and it was very unlikely that they would have a child. But if the child looks like his father, so that's a kind of indication that it was in fact the son of Abraham. The next pasuk, kach vayhi Yitzchak ben 40 shana, bekachto et Rivka bat Betuel Arami mipadan Aram, achot Lavan Arami lo leisha. So you have the whole story, right? Who are we talking about? We're talking about Yitzchak, who was 40 years old when he married Rivka, Arami mipadan Aram. He came from way off in the east, in Bavel, what we call today Bavel, Babylonia. Achot Lavan ha'arami lo le'isha. So, of course, the reason that the Torah tells us this, gives us all of this information about Rivka, is because it could have come up. Because, you know, Lavan ha'arami and Padan Aram, it's all going to be part of the story. So we want to get it in right at the outset. Rashi says about Arba'im Shana, Ben Arba'im Shana, Sharik Sheba Abraham Maher Behara Moriah. Right, Abraham was coming from Ahara Moriah, where Akedat Yitzchak took place. Right, Yitzchak wasn't killed, but it took place there. Nitbaser Shenolda Rivka, VYitzchak Haya Ben 37 Shanim. Shana, Sharei Bo Beperek, Bo Beperek, Beit Asara, Umishenolad Yitzchak Ad Ha'akeda, Shemeit Asara, 37 Shana, Ubat Tishim Haita, Kishenolad Yitzchak, Ubat Me'a Ve'esrim V'sheva Kshishemeita. She was 127 years old when she died, as we learned from the beginning of Chayei Sarah. Right, so Rashi is going through a few dates. Rashi was always concerned, especially in Bereishit, was always concerned about dates, how much time passed, and how much. Because after all, what Rashi does is that the pasuk says Ben Arba'im Shana. So if we already know that he was Ben Arba'im Shana, maybe it behooves us to find out how old she was before this time and after this time and all the highlights of her life. Okay, let's go to the next pasuk. Vayeter Yitzchak Lashem Lenochach Ishtoga. Yitzchak davened, right? Lashem. Lenochach Ishto, facing his wife. They faced each other. I mean, I don't know. I don't think there was a mechitza. And Ki Akarahi, she didn't have any children. She was barren. Vayeater lo Hashem, Batan Rivka Ishto. And then, as a result, I guess in the Pasuk, it seems to mean that as a result of the prayer, as a result of the fact that they beseeched God, then God created this miracle and she became pregnant because she was an akara. She was an akara. I mean, Sarah was an Akara. Sarah's Akara because of her old age. But she was an Akara because she didn't get pregnant. Right? So that's the best we can do is call her an Akara. Rashi, Pasuk Kaf Aleph. You see, it's the fourth wide line in the Rashi. Vayater, Herba v'hivtzir b'tfila. Rashi... What?
Well, Sarah was Akara her whole life, not just when she was 90.
Oh. Well, I mean is before she became pregnant, it would be... that's true. Thank you. Before she became pregnant, however, she was, you know, in spite of whatever happened before, she would certainly not be able to get pregnant now. So, Rashi says, V'yater lo... Nitpatser v'nitpayes v'nitpata. You know, she asked and she beseeched and she begged. V'omer ani. Rashi's talking, right, in his own name. Kol l'shon ayin tafresh l'shon haftzara v'revuyat. Who? V'chein, he has some other psukim like that as well. And then, v'yater lo. I mean, this is like a crucial Rashi. If Rashi says, v'yater lo, lamed vav, v'lo la, that God paid attention to him, but did not necessarily pay attention to her. That's amazing. Everybody knows that women daven better than men, but in this case, that doesn't seem to be the case. It doesn't seem the case. That, but again, v'chein v'yater lo. I'm sorry, v'yater lo, lo v'lo la, she'ein domo tfilat tzadik ben tzadik l'tfilat tzadik ben rasha lefikach lo v'lo la. Okay. I mean, everybody can say a drasha about this Rashi. I mean, maybe it's true. Maybe it's not always true. But what Rashi says is that Tzadik ben Tzadik has greater access to God than a Tzadik ben Rasha. Right? Now, what exactly Rashi means and why that should be the case, I mean, I could understand that it's a drasha on the Pasuk. The possible, why should it be true that a tzaddik ben tzaddik should have more to say in heaven than a tzaddik ben Rasha? A lot of people would argue that a tzaddik ben Rasha is the more difficult achievement, the greater achievement, whereas a tzaddik ben tzaddik, I mean, that's easy. Everybody can be a tzaddik ben tzaddik, but Rashi says clearly that I learn it from the word. I learn it from its drasha. That I learned from the word, and then it says, "Lenochachishto, ze omed bezavit zo, umitpalel vezo omedet bezavit zo umitpalelet." But one of them, Yitzchak, is standing in one corner and davening, and she, Rivka, is standing in another corner and davening, mitpalelet ve'ater lo velo la. Right now. So that's the story. The first story in the parasha is that there was a difficulty, the same difficulty that Sarah had, not the same physical difficulty, but the fact that the child was going to be born through a miraculous intervention of some sort. I don't know exactly, but apparently there was difficulty. They had to call upon God to help them have a child. The same thing was true about Sarah. Sarah didn't have a child. They had to turn to God. And even after turning to God, there was a certain difficulty that Sarah had believing that she would actually have a child. And so now we start the second story. Right, the second story is about the children, about the embryos, children. Vayitro pasuka bet vayitro tzitzua banim bikirba. right? Beitrotzitzu is a word that that means agitated. That they were agitated, Habanim, the two sons, Bikir Ba, Vatomerim came, Lamaze Anochi. I mean, she didn't like being agitated, I guess. And she said, if I have to go through this pain, if I go through this pain, I mean, who needs it? I'll be better off. He says, Im Kain Lamaze Anochi, Vatele Lidrosh Et Hashem. That's a difficult one with Lidroshet Hashem. But if you would look at the Rashi, Lidroshet Hashem means just that, to make a demand on God, to ask God for something, to explain something. Rashi says Lidroshet Hashem sheyagidla matahe besofa. This is why Yitrotzitzu was apparently a lot of agitation, a lot of difficulty. And she didn't understand why she should have so much difficulty. Right? Pasuk Kav Gimel. The Pasuk says, V'yomer Hashem l'shnei goyim l'bivitnech, u'shnei l'umim mi'ayich yiparedu, u'la'om mi'la'om ye'ematz, v'rab yavot za'ir. So even though God responded to Yitzchak's prayer, because Yitzchak was a tzaddik ben tzaddik, this pasuk says that there was something special that Hashem shared with Rivka. And what is that something special? You could call it a prophecy. You call it a prophecy because the explanation is that what's going on? What's going on? Why are you in such pain? God is going to explain to her. And in other words, the pain is caused by an untenable situation. And what is the untenable situation? What is the untenable situation? That the untenable situation is that the two of them, the two children, cannot get along with each other. But beyond that, there's also a hint that one will win and one will lose. And that was the secret information that Rivka received from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because there's no indication that this information was shared with Yitzchak. Yitzchak didn't, maybe he didn't know about Vayitrotzitzu, about the pain, maybe he didn't know about what's going to be. He certainly didn't know about Mila'om, La'om Mila'om Yo'amat. So assuming that the word La'om means something like what we call a nation or a people. La'om Mila'om Yo'amat. If you look at the Rashi says, Mila'om Yo'amat, Shnei Lu'umim Bevitnech. That's what the Pasuk says, yes? Shnei Lu'umim. Rashi, Ein Lu'um Ela Malchut. Malchut means that you have a king. Look, it's organized. It's something there to stay. It's impressive. Right? And then it says, Mila'om Ya'amatz, Lo Yishvu Bigdula. They're not going to be equal, these two children that you have inside of you. Kishezeh Kam Zenofel. When one rises up, the other one falls down. Right, v'chein hu omer, and this is in the pasuk in Yecheskel amal'a acharava, lo nitmalu tzur ela mechurbana shel Yerushalayim. The tzur is a city up north. I mean, it's in Lebanon, so that you know the greatness of that is the weakness of this. Right, you remember that Shlomo HaMelech, in order to get material to build the Beit HaMikdash, we have had to turn to Tzor at Sidon, which had apparently a lot of wood, and a means of getting that wood, even though it wasn't so easy, of getting that wood by boat to, well, Tel Aviv, from Tel Aviv to, I mean, there was no Tel Aviv, yes. But, So in other words, the secret that Rivka learned from HaKadosh Baruch Hu at this time was that the two children that she was going to give birth to, that those two children will always be at odds and fight. Actually, Pasuk Yecheskel says they'll go to war against each other. That was the secret. That was the secret. If you accept that principle, or accept that interpretation, that everything is understood. Everything's understood because Yitzchak, who was a nice guy, and felt that everything that God wanted or that God demanded should work out correctly. I mean, after all, Yitzchak, he just went through Akedat Yitzchak. He did something impossible, Yitzchak. Vayilchush Nehem Yachdav. Vayilchush Nehem Yachdav. They were of a like mind. They were like mine. Like Abraham didn't know why God wanted him to sacrifice his son, but he was prepared to do it. And Yitzchak certainly didn't know why God wanted him to sacrifice his son, and he was absolutely prepared to go down the path of Yitzchak, to go down the path of Abraham. So here we have two parents are going to have two children. But one of them knows something that the other one doesn't know. And the thing that what she knows is that they are going to be at odds, these two children. And that ultimately one has to win and the other has to lose. But it's not going to be. Whereas Yitzchak, he thought that the two children would work it out. It would happen. So now they were children, or they were embryos, or they were babies, or whatever you might call them. So, okay, so brothers sometimes have arguments. But eventually, it'll work out. You know, they'll get old. The brothers will get old, and then everything will be fine. Everything will be fine. But now we understand, if that's true, if that pasuk represents a prophecy that went to Rivka, then we understand the continuing stories, all of which are based on this idea that Rivka knew something that Yitzchak didn't know. And so when it says in the pasuk, here a little further, yeah. Vayigdelu ha-ne'arim, they grew up, this pasuk of Zion. Okay, they were different. They were radically different. So I could imagine that they were the kind of parents who like that. Like the idea that they have children that are not exactly the same or carbon copies of each other. They like that. And the last pasuk on the sheet is, it doesn't mean that Yitzchak liked Esav more than he liked Yaakov, but he liked him because he had a skill that was we could depend upon. And so when Esav was hungry, he could say to, I'm sorry, when Yitzchak was hungry, he could say to Esav, could you get me a hamburger? Get me something good. Get me something special. That all was nice. It doesn't mean that he didn't appreciate Yaakov. Doesn't mean he didn't appreciate Yaakov. He appreciated Yaakov. Yaakov was a Torah scholar. He was alone. So Yitzchak, who must have had some notion that he was part of this new world that was being built. I mean, you needed a nation, and in a nation with a nation, you couldn't just have one kind of person in the nation. There had to be different kinds of people, and different kinds of people. The different kind of people would make up the new nation of Am Yisrael. So this is what I think. This is what I think the simple pshat is, that Yitzchak, because he was an olat tmima, he saw the goodness in everything, and he saw the potential goodness in everything. That's why Yitzchak, well, we could say he made a mistake. But he made a mistake based on a a principle of education, right? Educators have to think that it's going to work out. Right? That's the way, that's what an educator is. It's just got to keep giving everybody in the class confidence that it will all work out. I mean, there are different, all kinds of people. You'd have a class of 30 or 40 or 50 children studying whatever. They always, some of them have a problem. It has nothing to do with raw intelligence. It's just that, I mean, there's so many factors that you can get along without, that some of those factors always get in the way. So again, when Esav came hungry and asked Yaakov for food, right, asked Yaakov for food, so Rivka said, oh, it's the struggle. This is the struggle. Who's going to be the Bechor? Who's going to win? We don't even understand what that means. I mean, what difference does it make if you call Esav the Bechor or you call Yaakov the Bechor? But Rivka understood it as part of the struggle. And she was committed to Yaakov. She knew something that Yitzchak simply did not know. And she couldn't relate it to him, probably, because it's not like getting it from God. Right? And like, she's not a professional prophet. You know, she does what she does. So this was all. Now the story goes on. Of course, the story about the brachot. Right, the brachot there. So what's the story? She wanted to make, we haven't got time for it, I think. But you should remember that the brachot that Yaakov offered Esav were not the brachot that Abraham offered Yitzchak. Those brachot, even Yitzchak knew that they had to be shared. He couldn't give them to one of the. It was like Yaakov Avinu decided to give brachot to Shimon v'Levi. They go together. It's so they had to come together, and they receive brachot. The same thing is true. The same thing is true about Yitzchak. Yitzchak wanted to give brachot to Abraham. To Yaakov and to Esav. Because for Yitzchak, the only explanation that he could have for the fact that he had twins, the fact that there were two of them, is that they had to be equal. Exactly the opposite of the position of the prophecy that was received by Rivka. That the correct one will be able to push the other one away, to deny his authority, to deny his, as Rashi says, malchut, deny his kingship. And she knew that. So her mistake was that she thought that Yitzchak was going to pass on the bracha of Abraham to Esav. And she had to stop that. She was committed to stopping that because, after all, that's what God told her. So she had to stop it. But in fact, even Yitzchak, who didn't know about all of this, understood that you couldn't give the bracha unilaterally to Esav. You could give him a bracha. You give him a bracha about riches. You give him a bracha about a strong position on Olam Hazeh. You can give all of that to Esav, but you can't give Esav the bracha of Abraham, the bracha that the land and will belong to you and your progeny will continue to. He knew that, but he didn't know how to get out of that conundrum. How is he going to get Yaakov and Esav to work together? How is he going to get Yaakov and Esav to work together? So we don't know. So she did what she did, right? What did she do? She dressed him up with Esav's clothes, and the smell was the smell of Esav, and he went in, and he got the bracha. Now, it would seem from reading the Chumash that Yaakov fooled Yitzchak. But it's not so clear. Yitzchak, after all, said, what did Yitzchak say? Right, Yadayim, Yidei Esav, Kol Kol Yaakov, Yadayim Yidei Esav. Like, what did he say? Why did he say that? He Yitzchak. Yitzchak, why did he say that? He said that because he was not sure. He wasn't sure who he was talking to. And that was the hint that Yitzchak received that indicated that this would not be the future. That the two of them together did not represent the future. But they had to separate and become one. Okay? You see, under the next section, the next psukim, Vayomer Yitzchak el Yaakov, Gishana v'mishcha b'ni, come close to me, and I will feel your arms. Right? Ha'ata ze b'ni Esav imlo. Doesn't that seem suspicious that he would do that? He couldn't see. He was wearing, Yaakov was wearing Esav's clothing. So he says, Vayigash Yaakov el Yitzchak avi vayimishehu. Vayomer hakol kol Yaakov yaday midei Esav. Velo hikiro. He didn't recognize him. Ki hayu yadav ki de Esav achiv sharot. Se'irot vayivarcheyu. Se'irot vayivarcheyu. I mean, the fact is that he was blind and that he had to trust his sense of hearing, the voice and his sense of smell to try to understand. So you see that it's possible, certainly possible to say that he didn't know what was going on. He didn't know what was going on. Okay. Now there's another point I'd like to make. If you look at the second sheet, or the second side, there's a Gemara quoted from Sanhedrin, Daf Tzadi Beis Amud Aleph. You see that Gemara? Mm-hmm. So the Gemara says this, V'amar Rabbi Elazar, Kol HaMachlif B'Diburo. Anybody who changes his witness, he said one thing, then he says another, or simply put, there's anybody who lies, ke'ilu oveda vodazara. So, I mean, you know, there are a lot of things that are ke'ilu avodazara, but it means it's a bad thing. It's really a bad thing. There's no way of justifying it. K'tiv hacha. Vayiti be'enav kimita'ateya. Yaakov says to his mother, if you make me do this, he's gonna catch on. Vayiti be'enav kimita'ateya. I'm gonna be like a trying to fool him. Uchtiv hatam. Haval hevel hema ma'asetanu tatuim. Hevel hema, they are nothing. Right, ma'aseh ta'atuim, people who lie. People who lie are doing nothing. So at the end of the day, Rabbi Elazar and the Gemara said,
in other words,
what?
People that are lying are doing ma'aseh hevel.
And so?
But when you say it's nothing, you don't mean that it's meaningless. You mean that it's a bad thing.
Yeah, it's a bad thing. He said it's like a avodah zarah, right?
Mm.
He says like it's nothing worse than that. So what about this point? What is the point? Yaakov says to his mother, but I'm a liar. And his mother says, don't worry, I know best. You just do what I say. So where is this resolved exactly? Where is this resolved? So it may be that it's resolved, as we said, in the nature of the actors, in the nature of Yitzchak and Rivka. Yitzchak and Rivka, and we understand why Yitzchak beat Rivka in Tfilah, but Rivka beat Yitzchak in prophecy. It's what's the better tefillah? The better tefillah is the one that somehow goes to God. That's what tefillah is. It's not the content of it. After all, in those days there was no content. I mean, no specific content that was repeated by all. But what was tefillah? What is tefillah even today? Tefillah is a way of approaching God. And it in my life, in the way I live, in what I do, God doesn't play a particular kind of role. I mean, sometimes things happen, terrible things happen to people. They need help and support, so they turn to God. But if they don't need help and support at that particular moment, they don't really turn to God. So the halacha gives us all, men and women, an opportunity to try to keep at it, to try to maintain it, to try to keep the tefillah. And that was something that Yitzchak was able to do. He was able to daven even better than Rivka was able to daven. But what we spoke about before was prophecy. Prophecy is something different. Prophecy is an achievement. An achievement, the Rambam says, that anybody can theoretically achieve prophecy. Well, you have to just work at it. You have to learn a lot of Torah, you have to do a lot of good deeds, you have to be a great person, and then maybe God will bestow upon you prophecy. But it's not like tefillah. Tefillah is something that everybody can do theoretically. I mean, I don't think people do it, but you could do it. You have the wherewithal. You have the wherewithal to do that. So these two people, Yitzhak and Rivka, were radically different in their persona, but they were also radically different about lying. Yitzhak says, you can't lie. You know, in Kabbalah, Yitzchak is called Tiferet. Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet. I made a mistake. Yaakov is called Tiferet. Right? Chesed, Gvura, Tiferet. And Tiferet equals Torah. So it's interesting. And just as a sideline, there's nothing to do with Kabbalah. It's just, you know, like a little wind that I'm making. But Kabbalah says that Yaakov is Tiferet, means that Yaakov is Torah. Tiferet, the Torah synonyms in a Kabbalistic system. How could you call Yaakov Tiferet if he is the greatest liar of all times? I mean, why? I mean, you can't say that the Balei HaKabbalah, that the Arizal, didn't know this parsha. You know, like every year he went away when they had the parsha of Toldot. It's hard to say that. So what was it? Where did they see the connection? Where did they see the connection between Yaakov, Tiferet, Torah, and another word for Torah? Emet. What is Emet? Unwavering truth. The Torah represents the truth. The truth. So now, Yaakov went with his mother and fought for his truth against the truth of Yitzchak. Against the truth of Yitzchak. So I would say this. Just, you know, offer a suggestion. When Yitzchak thought about the truth, there was only one truth. It was whatever God told him to do. There was no introspection. There was no, we all know people like that. I don't mean that they're like Yitzchak exactly. What I mean is that they're this type of personality. Everything is simple. Everything is obvious. Everything is clear. There are people like that. You know many of them. Right? And that's a person who sticks to the truth. Sticks to the truth. But the truth that he sticks to is the obvious truth, the real, the regular truth. But there's another kind of truth. And that's the truth behind the truth. We don't usually know what it means. We don't usually know what the reality that we find ourselves in, what it means. Why are we here? Why are things so good for us? Why are things so bad for us? Why is it that we do know things and why is it we don't know things? We don't know all of those things. So Yitzchak said, God provided us with twin boys. Well, that must be meaningful. It's not like Yitzchak and Yishmael. It's not like Yitzchak and Yishmael who came from two different mothers and were clearly and obviously not the children of... They were not the children of Abraham, both. It was only Yitzchak was the child of Abraham. Yishmael was not. And the same thing is true. The same thing is true about the twins. No, the same thing is not true about the twins according to Yitzchak. Twins were both born as the result of prayer. And therefore the prayer should indicate that the twins are as they should be. Right? They are the ones from whom the truth will emerge. But Rivka had an advantage. She received the prophecy. And since she received the prophecy, she knew that Yaakov and Esav could never live together. So, because of that, she did what she did. And Yaakov did what he did. But they did it in defense of the truth. Sometimes, even a lie can be employed as a defense of the truth. And so Yitzchak saw his children as being the foundation of a new world, of a new identity, of new people who would create a nation, the nation that God spoke to Avraham Avinu about. Rivka knew that this could not happen. It couldn't happen. So she was working for the truth that she received as a prophetess. Ula'omi la'omi amatz. And that's how Rivka convinced Yaakov that in order to fight for the truth, he would have to be deceitful and even to lie. So when the Gemara, when Rabbi Lazar said somebody who lies, it's like idolatry. It's of course true if he doesn't have a higher truth that he's trying to get to. By not telling the truth. Okay. All the best. Have a good Shabbos.
When she says, I take it on myself, then really in light of what she said, it's a kind of different interpretation because she said, I'll take it on myself.
Yeah, good.
Knowing that she has additional
information.
Purpose, right?
I would think so.
Right.
Yeah, that's good.
Mm-hmm. But it's still difficult with Rabbi Elazar.
What?
It still feels very difficult with Rabbi Elazar because he's talking about both.
Well, he's not talking about Rivka, he's talking about me.
Except that he quotes.
So we're talking about me, that's all right.
But he doesn't, he quotes the Psukim of Yaakov.
What?
But the Psukim that he quotes in his. As proof of his point, is Yaakov.
Oh, right. Further.
Okay.
So
you say there's a difficulty between my interpretation and the Gemara, but I still like my interpretation.
We do too.
Why not?
But I think it's difficult. I was just struggling with Rabbi Kiva from last week.
Oh.
Okay. All the best.
Yeah, that was.